All right, hello. My name is Michael Chin. I'm the author of the new novel, My Grandfather's an Immigrant and So Is Yours, coming this September from Cowboy Jamboree Press. I'm recording this a little bit in advance, so by the time you're all hearing this, the book might be out or the pre-sale might be going on. Who knows, but just pay attention to social media and whatever I post on my blog, and I'm sure that will be more accurate than what I'm saying now. But I'm calling this interview series, So Is Yours. And I'm really pleased today to have Sean Berman here with me, virtually with me, I should say. I think we're on opposite sides of the country, but nonetheless, to be able to come together via the magic of Zoom here. So I have a bio for Sean here that I've adapted from his website. I welcome him to correct me if any of this is, if I've misinterpreted or misreading it or whatnot. But Sean Berman is a writer, cinephile, and beer nerd. He runs The Daily Drunk, an online journal. His writing tends to focus on pop culture, movies, and comedy. Some of his writing can be found on Hobart, Little Old Lady Comedy, and Maudlin House. And he's the author of the books Mr. Funny Man and At the Movies from Alien Buddha Press. You can follow him on Twitter at SBB_writer. So with all that, Sean, the way that we met was actually through those online journals that I referenced in reading your bio. So you were kind enough to take a few of my pieces. You ran Dream Journal, which took a few of my kind of movie-inspired flash fiction pieces, and then more recently in the Daily Drunk. So I really admire those projects. I was so happy to be a part of it. But just sort of the way that they sort of lack pretension and sort of, really kind of, if anything, kind of steep in kind of the pop culture or kind of, letting our hair down with things that you wouldn't necessarily see in a more traditional literary magazine setting. But so before I blather on any longer, let me turn it over to you and just sort of, I'd love to hear a little bit about sort of specifically starting just with the online journal projects and kind of, what motivated them, what your process has been, kind of your vision for those projects.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here and it's really great talking with you today. Yeah, both of those journals, especially The Daily Drunk, those started from a lockdown journal sort of thing. I was laid off from work. I needed something to keep my time busy and occupied. And I don't know, I always had an inclination to kind of start one. And I thought, well, there's no really any journals out there that are kind of fun and lax where you can let your literary hair down for a little bit. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. I want to read about Adam Sandler and Jim Carrey and Guy Fieri. And there's nowhere else where people can seem to go to read and write about that stuff. So I said, what the hell? Why not? So I started that and I really had no expectations for it. I've never done any literary journal stuff before. And a year plus later, we're still kicking. I still have the drive to do it. And it's been a lot of fun. We're growing. We're doing print anthologies now. We're releasing print stuff. We're in bookstores. We're going to have live events. So it's just crazy to think about. It's just something I started on a whim.
Yeah. No, I mean, and sometimes I think that's the way it goes, right? Is that it's when you don't kind of overthink a project and kind of analyze the market super carefully. It's just sort of pursuing something that you're interested in and that there seems to be a niche for, right? So
yeah. Definitely. That's like, this seems cool. Let's try this. No expectations whatsoever. So this is all extra. This is great.
No, awesome. And I expect, based on my own limited following of people who tend to listen to me and read my stuff, some of the people who are interested in listening to this interview might be especially interested in, I want to submit to The Daily Drunk. I want to join this community. I want to see my work out there. And I'm curious what you would tell those folks, because, I think part of what I admire about the project is its accessibility. That doesn't feel as though there's a lot of, secrecy. There's not long wait periods. I think both times I submitted to you, I heard back from you within a week's time, which is really, unusual in kind of literary circles and whatnot. But I'm curious what you might say to people who are kind of interested in, becoming a part of it.
Yeah, I really pride the journal in how it's accessible. Like you were saying, it's you have established writers, you have writers who will send you something. Hey, I wrote this on the toilet. I don't know what this is. And I've never submitted before, but what about this? And it's just my only advice is don't take yourself seriously when you're sending stuff. Just try to have fun. This is a fun space. There's other more serious avenues you can go about, but I just want to share work, connect with people, other writers. I'm a writer at the end of the day as well.
Yeah,
and I view myself as that first. I'm just trying to make connections with other writers.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. That's great. And you've led me to the next thing I want to ask you about, which is Mr. Funny Man, which the folks who are listening can't see me holding up the book. I'm holding it up to Sean to prove that I have the copy. And I won a drawing that he offered, so I shouldn't be too proud of winning a free copy. But nonetheless, I did read it, though, and I really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, part of what was really fun about this collection to me is, again, similar to the vision that you were talking about for, you know, the Daily Drunk, there's a lot of pop culture, there's a lot of kind of humor in there. And I'm curious, especially about the pop culture piece of it, because so many of the pieces in here reference, you know, movies, television shows, all sorts of media, a lot of Adam Sandler packed in there. And I'm curious about kind of, you know, how, why, what's your process? You know, what moves you to write about these things and how you go about that?
It's so interesting. It's just, I'll have a day where I'm watching a bunch of Adam Sandler movies and I'm like, I kind of want to write about that. I don't know. It seems interesting. There could be an interesting angle about him winning the golf tournament and or him being Scuba Steve. There's something there. And, you know, whether it's an Adam Sandler movie or a Scorsese flick, everybody can connect to pop culture and movies and film and video games. Everybody has something that they're passionate about, like, with those things. And I think with pop culture and movies and video games and TV shows, there's something there. Everybody can recall a favorite. Everybody can recall a time and place that they were connecting and they were having a fun time with the people that they were around. But I just hope those pieces in large can evoke those kind of emotions, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Yeah, and I think, as you said, you know, when we think back to kind of nostalgia for our youth, that not to say we don't have nostalgia for, you know, for books. I mean, because I think you may have sharp readers as well. But yeah, I mean, I think the first place I tend to go to are the movies I grew up on, TV series. And I shouldn't give short shrift to professional wrestling. That's a space where I've actually, you know, written quite a bit. I'm, you know, an unabashed lifelong fan of the form. And so when I see someone who has poems about Stone Cold Steve Austin, I can't help but ask about that. I don't know if you consider yourself, you know, a hardcore fan or just kind of a passing interest or where on that spectrum you might fall, but I can't not ask about, you know, your kind of manhood
in that. I'm sure, like most boys growing up, I was just so into wrestling. It was Stone Cold. This guy is telling people to go screw themselves, flipping people off with a bird. Yeah. How awesome is that? I mean, I went to kindergarten. I saw Stone Cold flipping people off, and I did that too. I said, I want to do that. Stone Cold's doing that. But wrestling is so much fun. There's so much theatrics, and there's so much personality. There's just so much to write about. What's not to love about Stone Cold? I remember taking the day off of school, and this is when he was driving the big beer truck into the Times Union Center at Albany. I was like 10 years old or however old I was. And that was just so great. You're going to remember that. He's just spraying the whole McMahon family with beer. That memory's there forever.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. And, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, I think. I'm not going to date myself very specifically here, but I'll say I was in high school for kind of the height of, you know, Stone Cold and The Rock and you know, Triple H and all of them. And I always thought sort of that was sort of the perfect time to be a wrestling fan was like I am at this stage where I want the most crass possible humor and kind of violence and all that. And that's sort of what the style was in that day. But I can imagine you, even as a younger person, that, you know, still that kind of resonates. There's something that sort of transcends generations, I think, almost about specifically kind of those Stone Cold theatrics. But that's cool to hear. That was really just literally a part of your childhood, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so good to meet other writers like yourself who just like, hell yeah, wrestling was a huge part of my childhood growing up. And let's write about it. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, so something else that's cool from your collection and beyond your collection, because I've seen your other pieces, you know, online as well that aren't necessarily in the book, but your titles, they tend to be, you know, long, they tend to be humorous. They often feel like poems themselves. And I'm just curious to hear a little bit about sort of your approach to that. You know, sort of how intentional you are about that. Do the titles come first then the poem or vice versa? In general, kind of, you know, how that comes about.
Yeah, the titles definitely come first. The titles sort of give way for the other, for the rest of the piece to form. I guess it's sort of like a prompt in a way for myself. It's once I have the title, once I know what I want the piece to be about, you get that out of the way first. And I think it's easier for me for the rest of the piece to flow. I very rarely will I write a piece without having the title established, as weird as that is.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. And I know different writers work different ways. I would say I'm like a 75% of the time I have to write before I know the title, but the other 25%, it's like, yeah, the title, I know exactly what this is.
Hell yeah.
Ironically enough, whereas the only book this has been the case for, but this novel I have coming out, the title totally came first.
That's awesome.
An immigrant, so is yours. I actually envisioned it as an essay after I thought of the title. This was in the height of, you know, people kind of talking about, you know, Trump's immigration policy, mm-hmm. and the fact that his grandfather himself was an immigrant, and then other kind of conservative pundits kind of coming out and people tracking their lineage and all that. And I was sort of constructing all these things. My grandfather was an immigrant, so it's literally true of myself. But then I, you know, sort of started thinking more, reflecting more, and realizing what I had to say in the essay space versus the novel space, and the project mm-hmm. transformed from there. But anyway, that's sort of a tangent. But yeah, I think it is sort of interesting that interplay we can get between what a title sort of gives us in terms of a prompt, like you said.
Yeah, it that's good to hear that the title came first, though. It's a lot of people, they do struggle with the titles, and
Yeah. And well, and so, you know, with all that, you know, and speaking of sort of, you know, titles and riffing off of that, your other book at the movies. So, you know, I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I'm recording in advance. So it's towards the end of July right now. The book has actually just come out as we're speaking. So
yes. I'm
excited to get a look at it. So, you know, again, congratulations on that book, you know, getting out into the world. And I'd love to hear a little bit about that project. You know, so I know it's at least framed as essays as opposed to poetry, which Mr. Funny Man is.
Yeah.
And you know, so I'd love to hear kind of, you know, what inspired this project, what it consists of. The title suggests, you know, again, we're looking at pop culture. The movies are going to play a part here. But yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit from your perspective, kind of what this thing is.
Yeah, funny enough, I never intended to write an essay collection or to have a collection of movie-inspired essays. One day you start writing an essay and it's about movies. And then another day you have another essay about movies. And then, a few months down the road, you go, hey, I got something here. I have a bunch of similar pieces framed around movies and they all have a similar tone. Maybe start thinking about compiling them into a manuscript. And it sort of came together last year, kind of quickly, actually, within a six-month time frame, I'd say. You know, I mentioned I was laid off during the pandemic, so I'm just banging away at my keyboard, trying to take my mind off everything that's happening. And it was kind of really amazing to put something like that together. I've never really considered myself an essayist or a poet or any of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to give us a peek into this collection, you know, because I know at least a couple of the pieces from this book are online, so people can find them. I'll try to link to some of them in the show notes. But you know, what movies are we talking about? And kind of, I guess I'm curious about your perspective on that. I have some hints based on what I've read of your poetry, based on some, you know, conversation we've had. But I'd love to hear just a little bit more about kind of, you know, what this book actually consists of.
Yeah, we got Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, my favorite movie of all time. I think that's one of those movies that hits you in your very pretentious teenage years, and it just sticks with you for some reason. No matter how hard you try to shake it, it just sticks with you.
So, it was my pretentious 20s, but yeah, I hear you on that.
Very similar, yeah. But it's just one of those that really stuck with me, and it's still sticking with me today. That one's about the whole beach scene, and just what that means, and dreams in general, and just, it's interesting how that movie is just still sticking with me today. So I have that one. I have essays where, what could my overweight 16-pound cat, what would he be a good role for? You know, I don't see him being in Lion King or anything that requires him to be the star of the show. But we have that one. There's an essay in there about how I joined the Quidditch Club in Brooklyn, and that went terrible. I got absolutely destroyed by some guy named Mikey T. He was huge. He had arms the size of water coolers, and he just mowed me down. And that was the day my dream of being a Quidditch star died.
Okay.
Yeah, just a bunch of random movies in there.
No, it's just an interesting thing, right? Because I know that I feel as though there were transformation from, you know, J.K. Rowling invents it, and, you know, we won't get into the J.K. Rowling baggage here.
No.
There is baggage, but we'll put that aside and put that in a box for the moment. But, you know, it's sort of a fictional game. And then I feel like there are these pockets of people trying to figure out how they could play this in the real world and kind of developing rules, all the way to it becoming an actual thing, right? That there are actual leagues, there's a more formalized, you know, sport now.
There are entire YouTube compilation clips of like Quidditch World tournaments. I'm like, oh man, this, and I just joined this to meet people when I first moved down to the city. I didn't know anybody. It was like, I got to make friends somehow. So this seemed like a low pressure, low commitment sort of thing, but I was wrong. It was too much pressure, total opposite.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, no, I'm really excited to check out that book as well. And you're a busy guy, right? So I mean, in addition to all of this, you know, with the Daily Drunk, I know that there's the Awesome Awful podcast, right?
Yes.
Or I believe it's one of your colleagues who hosts it, but I know you've been on it multiple times at this point. You know, and so I'll be transparent here. I've only listened to little bits and pieces. I've got it on my phone, so I'm going to listen to some more of it, you know, soon after. But I love the concept of it too, because, you know, it overlaps everything we've been talking about in terms of sort of, you know, destigmatizing the guilty pleasure, you know, kind of enjoying kind of what's fun, whether it's sort of high art or not. And so what I want to lead to here, though, so, you know, we mentioned it a couple times already, you know, Adam Sandler, there are poems about him. One of the first episodes is about Click of that podcast. So I know you're a real aficionado, it seems like, of the Sandler. You're wearing an Adam Sandler t-shirt. So the folks at home listening can't see. Maybe I'll try to grab a screen grab of that, but that's great. Yeah. So with that, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. And if it's too hard, we can expand the list. I'm going to say top three favorite Adam Sandler movies and why.
Oh, wow. Billy Madison. There's just a timeless feel to that. I remember my dad showing me that growing up. Well, he showed me all of them growing up. Mm-hmm. This will give way to family for sure. But that one, there's just a charm to it. It's just so many classic bits. He's getting chased around drunkenly by the Penguin. He's putting on his boots, going back to school. Sloppy Joe's. Happy Gilmore. I mean, how can you go wrong with that? Yeah. Love a good golf movie. Maybe Big Daddy. That one is so timeless. That could be one for me, actually. That's just such a feel-good one. It just, even whenever it's on TV, even though I have it on DVD and all that, you can't help but watch it.
Yeah.
It's very charming. He's at his best when he's just so charming.
No, I think that's right. Anyway, and it's funny because that might actually be my top three as well. So I think I'm on this. There's sort of, you know, and correct me if you feel differently about it. You've studied his catalog a little more, and I'll be transparent. I've missed large chunks. I sort of saw a lot of the relatively early Sandler catalog from the 90s. I was a lapsed fan. I've seen some of the more recent stuff like Hubie Halloween and Uncut, right, which I want to talk about in a moment here. But Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, I feel like, are sort of the definitive, like, statements of I'm here. Like, this is what...
Definitely 1-2 punch, yeah.
Yeah. And I always sort of feel as though it's they're 1A and 1B. Like, it's hard to parse which one is, you know, better or different than the other. But Madison being sort of the more, you know, random, so we're going to jump around. There's going to be sort of just sort of nonstop jokage here, right? Whereas Happy Gilmore, I think, has a little bit more of a plot, or arguably a little bit more of a heart, but not quite as funny in some ways to me. So I feel like
you
care about story more or the laughs more. I could see going either way on that particular question. But
yeah, I think it definitely comes down to, do you prefer the slapstick or do you want a little narrative in it? I sometimes lean more towards the slapstick. I want to unwind. Yeah.
No, I think, you know, and obviously we're parsing something very silly here, saying what's more or less slapstick in the Adam Sandler universe.
Right.
Sort of feeling, though, there was a period there, where he skews more towards actual narrative after that, right? With, you know, like Big Daddy or The Wedding Singer or, you know, Go to 51st Dates, movies like that, they have more of a, you know, there is a plot. There's often the romantic narrative that's kind of driving the thing behind it. So. I think it's a cool space to kind of navigate and deceptively deep. I think that there's really a lot going on there. I'm curious, Uncut Gems, I assume you've probably seen it as someone who's such a big fan.
Right? Oh, yeah.
I'm curious. So I have my own reactions to that film, but it's very different, right? That was sort of my return to the Adam Sandler universe after, you know, I'm sure I'd rewatched Billy Madison at some point in between, but, you know, a decade or so away from really paying much attention to what he was doing in terms of new movies, at least. I'm curious, as someone who, you know, enjoys his catalog so much, what are your reactions to a movie like that?
Yeah, obviously I enjoyed it, you know. It's Adam Sandler like we've never seen him before. It's the most anxiety-inducing film I've ever seen. And it's great. He's balls to the wall for an hour and a half, and there's no escaping it. You're just praying that he doesn't mess up so much that he ends up in a bad situation. But it's a weird film for me. It's like, I enjoy it, but it's not something I would ever place over his comedies, you know?
Yeah.
It's not something I want to rewatch too many times, as much as I enjoy his performance. Yeah.
No, I think that's really right. Cause it's one of those things where, you know, I could put on, you know, Happy Gilmore virtually anytime, just in the background. Yeah. Even. And it's not a hard thing to watch, right?
Yeah.
A handful of jokes haven't aged so well, but you know, 90% of it is very easy to, you know, reconsume. But yeah, Uncut Gems, I don't think I would just, you know, sit down with the popcorn or sit down while I'm doing the in the background. You know, it's just not that kind of movie. I was talking with a friend about it, and we sort of arrived at the point of sort of thinking that maybe this is what an Adam Sandler movie is in, you know, 2020, or I forget, it may come out in 2019 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. You know, now with kind of everything kind of skewing to that more sort of dark space and sort of, you know, and exploring gray areas, you know, maybe this is sort of, he's still an eccentric character. He's still, you know, kind of in over his head in every imaginable way, except now it's serious. You know, right. Now he's actually crying as opposed to doing kind of the
kind of sound. Well, he's 50 now. He can maybe that's it.
That might be it. You're right. No, great. But okay, well, so, you know, for the last stage of you know, the interview here, as a tie-in to my new book, you know, again, it's called My Grandfather's an Immigrant and So Is Yours. You know, there's a lot about it that I've tapped into my own autobiography and kind of cherry-picked pieces of it. And a lot of it's fictionalized as well. But, you know, it got me thinking a lot about my own family. And as I'm talking to other writers, it occurs to me that's not always something that comes up when, you know, in interviews or social media as kind of what your family background sort of looks like. And, you know, and sometimes for good reasons, because I know it could be a sensitive area. And so I never want to push people to, you know, ask the impolite question of like, oh, so, you know, what's your relationship with your father like? So I do feel like it can be kind of an interesting space to explore in thinking about, you know, us as creatives, thinking about identity in general, all of that. So, you know, I want to include grandparents in this just as kind of a tie into the book, but I'm happy to not limit us to that conversation. I'm curious about kind of, you know, your family kind of background and maybe how they've kind of shaped you, who kind of was most influential to you, how that's affected your identity as, you know, a creative person, but also just as a human being as well.
Yeah. So I didn't know my grandparents growing up. They both passed before I was born, but definitely my father, my mom, they had huge influences on me. My dad's also a little bit of a writer too. So I have a lot of vivid memories of us just writing these really crappy stories on loose leaf papers. We had one about a carrot who became, or a boy who turned into a carrot. And that was like one of the first stories we wrote together. So I have a lot of memories of just writing random stuff with my dad. And we text every day about pieces that we're working on and, well, where can we go with this? Or I'll FaceTime and say, I'm stuck with the plot in my book. What do you think? And we help each other out still. And that's been pretty great. And my dad is a pretty big comedy fan. So I would say that has definitely shaped my writing and my interest. Growing up, he was like, I'm tired of buying you all these crappy toys that just break after like a week. So we would go to Walmart and we'd pick out one of the other crappy movies out of the $5 bin. Mm-hmm. And we'd take those home instead of a toy. And then we'd just sit around every Friday night, we'd grab a pizza and we'd watch these handful of movies that we'd grab. And that stayed with me a lot. It definitely has formed my viewing and my interests, and definitely formative.
That's great. Yeah. And do you feel as though the work that you guys do, you mentioned that he's a writer as well. Do you feel that there's, you know, real overlap and similarities in terms of the kinds of things you're doing or your motivations, or do you find that it's really separate and it's kind of evolved away from each other? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, he's a little bit of a satire writer too. He likes to write wacky pieces, but he doesn't really dive into pop culture per se as much as I do. But his stuff is also not as serious, I would say, and it helps. I'll say like, oh, I have an idea about a talking object, and he'll say, oh, I've done a couple pieces about that, and it's just nice to riff with one another.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. Yeah. And this is just curious, and you don't have to go into this if, you know, you don't have an answer or if not an answer you really want to talk about, but I'm curious about other families. Sounds like your father's been a big influence and someone who's sort of a creative partner with you in some ways, and, you know, and also just kind of influenced your humor. I'm curious, are there other family members who you feel, you know, had, you know, an influence, you know, for the better or worse, or you know, or an interesting, unexpected, maybe is a better way of asking it.
I'd say my younger brother, definitely, he dabbles in the writing, but he also, he's definitely into the movies like I am. He's definitely into TV shows, and he's always forwarding me like new shows or movies that are coming up. And he goes, this could be interesting to talk about. And it's really good to connect with somebody like that who's also into that stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I feel as though siblings are sort of this unique space. Yeah. Someone who you sort of innately understand the aesthetic of more than I think most people in our life. Like at this point, I think I could say that my spouse, I sort of understand what she is or isn't going to like. There was like a good like 4 or 5 year period of like, okay, so this is where the line is. If this is too scary as like a horror movie, or this is too raunchy as a comedy, you know, versus what you're actually going to enjoy.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, my sister, we grew up on the same movies. Her sister, she was very, you know, influential in kind of referring me to everything from, you know, movies to music to everything down the line. But you know, I can sort of instinctively, you know, watch something and say, oh, I bet she'd like this, right? And yeah. I suggest that to her. You know, and there is a real divide, right? Like we both watched wrestling up until the point that she was like 6 years old, I think, and then probably a little older, but probably like 7 or 8. But regardless, then she completely lost interest in the form, and I obviously went on from there. But there's a lot of other strongholds that we've shared. So
that's funny. I've been with my spouse for 7 years now.
Yeah.
And she just recently broke the news to me that she doesn't like Adam Sandler at all.
Oh, no.
And she doesn't like comedy movies, actually.
Either. Does that count as irreconcilable differences?
I think so. I think I have a taste. It broke my heart. I go, who the hell are you? I don't know you. Yeah. Keeping that secret locked up. Yeah.
No, and just, you know, because you made mention for your spouse, I'm just curious, you know, of any sort of role they play in sort of your creative life, or, you know, is that something you keep separate, or is that, you know, a different part of your life?
Yeah, no, she definitely enjoys watching movies too, and she's, for a very long time, she was always the first set of eyes on a piece that I wrote, you know. Mm-hmm. If it could get past her, it was good enough to send out.
Yeah.
And so... But it's gotten to the point where she's just so tired of reading stuff. She doesn't want to look at it anymore.
Yeah.
But she's so supportive. She was a big factor in starting the Daily Drunk. She bought the domain for it. She goes, you've always wanted to do it. Here you go. Good. Hammer away. So definitely supportive. And I couldn't do it without her.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. Yeah, and it's sort of, I like what you mentioned there, because I think that there's sort of this idealized vision that some folks have of if they're, you know, a writer and they're with their partners reading everything that they do, and, you know, it's this whole intertwined life that they have. You know, but my partner's not a writer, right? I mean, and she's a creative person, but that's not really her world. And so she certainly read, you know, a lot of my stuff, but there's been periods where I've just got a lot of stuff coming out and she doesn't keep up with it. And that's fine, right? And
it's fine.
That you sort of separate the ego thing, but, you know, but she is the one who bought me a plane ticket last time I went to AWP, you know, and she is, you know, kind of my, the primary cheerleader in anything that I kind of, you know, decide to pursue creatively.
Yeah.
So, no, that's interesting to hear of, you know, situations like that.
I think that's common too.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I think you're exactly right. But yeah, well, so, you know, as we wrap up here, and Chris, is there anything else that you would like to, you know, plug or talk about? I mean, again, you're a pretty prolific person in terms of putting work out in the world and having different projects. I tried to do my homework. I tried to hit on the big spot, but is there anything else that, you know, you could refer readers to or other, you know, even if there's specific, you know, pieces you have out in the world that are, you know, out online that people could, you know, check out to get a better sense of you if they haven't read much of your work yet, you know, anything like that, I'd love to hear.
I appreciate that a lot, Mike. Yeah, just Mr. Funny Man's available on Amazon. Hell of a price, $3.99. I think that's going to be the forever price for it. I just want people to pick it up and read it. I'm not, I don't want to make any money. I just want people to read my stuff. So that's out. At the Movies is out, my humorous collection of cinema-inspired essays. And I just want to go ahead and plug the Daily Drunk. I think a lot of the people over there are doing some awesome, awesome, awesome things. Awesome, awful podcasts. We have a lot of cool writers coming up. I hope people check that out. We're on Apple, Spotify, wherever podcasts are. And we got a lot of cool anthologies coming out. We got the Mall Rats one that we're doing. We got a Lord of the Rings one. And at the time of this when this drops, we'll probably have a Halloween themed one coming out.
Oh, great. Okay.
A lot of cool stuff. And I'm really happy with where this is heading.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you know, keep doing what you're doing in the world. You know, the reason I reached out is because I just, you know, admire the body of stuff you're putting together, and I think you're an interesting person to talk to for sure. So, thanks so much for making the time to do this. Yeah, hopefully we'll be in touch.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mike. Take care.
All right, thank you.